Sarah Paretsky revolutionized the mystery world in 1982 with the only introduction of Private Eye V.I. Warshawski in Indemnity Only. V.I., tough, credible, street smart, and feminine, challenged the stereotypes of women in fiction as victims or vamps, and Paretsky made it possible for a new generation of crime writers to thrive. In her new novel, Brushback, she continues to use real-world issues to fuel her prose. When V.I. Warshawski confronts crooked politicians and buried secrets from her own Chicago past. Like her protagonist, Sarah is a crusader for social justice and an advocate for those on society's margins. Sarah Paretsky is currently president of the Mystery Writers of America, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. Good to be here.
It's always nice to have you on the program, and so thrilled that you're back. When a new novel comes out like this, and you get to talk about another one, what is that situation? What is that like for you to be able to further explore this character? That seems like a great gift.
You know, V.I. is someone who just seems to be an integral part of me these days. There was a time when I thought, oh gosh, I should start a new series. I should do what my more successful peers are doing. And I wrote a couple of short stories. I tried a couple of different characters, but they didn't come to life for me the way V.I. does. So I'm always glad to be back with a new story about her.
What does it mean to you when you talk about writers who are perhaps more successful than you? Are you competitive in that way, or do you just write what you like to write and then what happens?
You know, I'm very perverse, I think, in the way that all writers are. At the same time that I want everyone in America to buy my book, I think, oh gosh, you know, it's just not good enough. And so I'm more competitive with myself and my own desire for an unachievable perfection, I think, than I am with other writers.
When it comes to that idea of this character, when you initially had the idea for the character, was the plan always to have it be a serious character?
You know, Joe, when I started, I had two things that I was trying to do. One was I really wanted to create a woman detective who was credible, who could solve her own problems. And in the context of the kinds of books we had been reading and written in the 40s, 50s, 60s, if a woman had a sex life, she was either going to be killed or she was the killer. And if she didn't have a sex life, then she really couldn't figure out how to tie her own shoes without adult supervision. So I wanted someone who was like me and my friends, who was doing a job that just hadn't existed for us when we were growing up, and was taking chances, solving problems, living, you know, having a sex life that didn't define who she was morally. So it took me a long time, a lot of years, to pull that together and to write a novel. And the other thing I was trying to do is to see if I actually could write a novel. So I guess I was not imagining a series then. I was imagining myself with a published book, and it happened, and then the rest kind of evolved from there.
It seems so fascinating to have a character that has been with you for so long and been with us for so long. Was there anything that you did in the very beginning, that an attribute or something that you ascribed to this character that later you regretted and said, wow, I wish I hadn't put myself in that corner?
I wish that I hadn't made her an orphan. I was so nervous and insecure about whether or not I could actually write a novel that I pretty slavishly followed the conventions of the hard-boiled form. And the typical male hard-boiled detective is a loner, and that's not my nature. V.I. quickly gained a kind of a surrogate family instead of close friends, but I think the series could have been different if I'd left her parents alive. So that's the big thing that I regret about it.
So even as decisions have to be made now as to how this character ages and what direction she goes in. Do you think about that? Is it a more conscious and deliberate decision?
I've been struggling with the issue of her aging for a number of years now, and I have not come up with a good solution. When I started the series, I wanted her to age in natural time because who she is was determined partly by the big social events of the 60s and 70s, the civil rights movement, second wave feminism, the Vietnam War protests. And then also her mother was a refugee from Mussolini's Italy, and that plays an important role in quite a number of the stories, including, by the way, Brushback, where her mother, who wanted to sing opera, was kind of reduced to giving music lessons to the children of the neighboring steel workers in the poor south side of Chicago where they lived. So VI aging, she started at about 30, and she's 50 now after 30 years. And I want her to continue to be an effective physical presence. I want her to be physically vital. I'm not ready, maybe because I was badly injured in a car crash 10 years ago, and I'm not that able physically anymore. I want VI out there credibly using her body on the streets and in the bedroom. So I'm sort of waffling on that. I haven't figured out a good way to let her continue to age. She's going to stay around 50 for a while, I'm sorry to say.
But you're sorry to say, but yet I think those of us that seems comfortable. We like the physicality. We like that part of the character. So for us, the reader, that is an attraction, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And you know, the other thing, Joe, is that the other thing about my own aging, there's a lot of loss that, I know everyone has loss in their lives, but the older you get, the more you have. And the world that I can control is my fictional universe, and the characters, the older people in VI's life, like Lottie Herschel, the doctor who's been an important mentor for her and also patches her up when she does get beaten up, I can't bear for Lottie or for her cranky downstairs neighbor, Mr. Contreras. I don't want to lose them. I can control that world, and they're going to just stay where they are, too. And the dogs would be about 150 now in dog years. They're just going to keep on just fine.
Well, there are many authors have told me you can do a lot of things, but you can't screw around with the dogs. You can't, kill the dog.
I have a British crime writer friend, Liza Cody, who said the only time she ever got an angry letter about a death was when she killed a cat.
Yeah, that's not good. You can't do that. Tell me about being president of Mystery Writers of America. What does that job entail, and how much are you enjoying this role?
You know, being president of MWA, Mystery Writers, it's kind of like being Queen of England, except you don't have a palace or money or people curtsying when you come into the room.
you have to work on
that.
But you
are the figurehead, and the board is like Parliament. They're doing the heavy lifting and the hard work. I agreed to take the job on because publishing is just in free fall these days. When I published my first book, there were about 40 main houses. There are 5 today. And once you get big conglomerates, they want their writers making a lot of money for them. Writers who've been successful but not huge money makers have been dropped. People are scrambling. They're self-publishing. They're trying to find their way through the maze. And Mystery Writers of America, we want to provide a better presence for writers in the marketplace. And just to the extent that we all can, we want to help them navigate this very, very high-stress time. The other thing, frankly, bluntly, is that the writers who are dropped first are the ones who are more on the margins. And so I'm talking about African-American writers, other writers of color, Asian writers, and people in the LGBT world. So we are working on ways to educate libraries, educate bookstores, bring titles to them that I don't want to say they're outside your comfort zone because they're just, they're great mysteries, but they feature characters that don't look exactly like the mainstream in publishing. And so we're trying to raise the profile of some of those writers on the margins, and that's a project that's very dear to my heart.
Interestingly, in the mainstream of our culture, but not necessarily the mainstream of publishing.
Exactly. I wrote a piece on this for a book list, one of the publications of the American Library Journal. It's called The Dolus Syndrome, They Don't Look Like Us, and it's publishing is still predominantly a pretty white business, and I don't think there's deliberate prejudice among anyone that I know in the industry, but there is just a lot of blinkers. We faced this problem really with women crime writers when I was starting out, and Sisters in Crime, which I helped found. We did a lot of education and kind of changed that landscape for women, and we're hoping at MWA that we can start changing it for other writers too.
Well, the new book is out. It is entitled Brushback. It is published by Putnam. Sarah Paretsky, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with the new novel and all of your great work.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to direct people to my website, sarahparetsky.com, because all the bookstores where I'm signing are on that website. If you want a signed book, personalized book, just get in touch with any of those stores, and they'll be glad to take care of it for you.
That's terrific. It's sarahparetsky.com, the new book, Brushback, published by Putnam. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.